At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff, and I'm your Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. We've got a jam-packed episode for you this week. There's a whole lot going on this time of year. We'll of course talk about Mizzou men's basketball making some waves with one of the program's really biggest wins since joining the SEC, upsetting number 5 Florida on the road this week. We'll talk about that game, the weekend's game against Vanderbilt, and what this means for a Mizzou men's basketball season that might be evolving a little bit into potentially more than any of us thought it was going to be going into it. We'll also talk a little Mizzou football. They've got a splashy new transfer on that front, and they're pretty darn close to getting a new linebackers coach, and frankly might have announced that by the time this recording reaches most of you. And then we've got the quote-unquote real news to talk about. The athletic department is back in the red from a financial standpoint. We'll dive into what a $15 million deficit means for Mizzou athletics and the university at large. But we want to start off with the men's basketball team, because I think that's got the most buzz around Columbia this week. As I mentioned there, Tigers went to number 5 Florida, playing in Gainesville on Tuesday night, an 8 p.m. tip-off that was actually 9 p.m. Eastern. So very, very late game, which the SEC just does. It's better than Texas and Oklahoma, who had to play at 10 Eastern this week on Wednesday. But anyway, Tigers and Gators play. Mizzou, I don't actually know what the betting line ended up being. I think KenPom had it as a double-digit game, like probably 16 points or so. I was thinking, yeah, Mizzou would lose in that 12 to 15 point range. Boy, was I wrong. Mizzou led by as many as 19 in the first half and held on in the second half, hit the free throws when they needed them at the end, and came out of the swamp 83-82 winners. For Mizzou, that was the first road win against a top 5 program since beating number 3 Baylor in Waco, Texas in 2012. Mizzou was still in the Big 12 at that point. And I think Mizzou was ranked itself at that point. So this is more of an upset, and certainly the biggest upset that has arrived since Mizzou moved to the SEC, right? But before we dig too much into that game and what it means, I actually want to go back one game in time to talk about Missouri beating Vanderbilt over the weekend. This was during last week's show, during last week's, while I was writing last week, talked a lot about how important it was for Mizzou to go 2-0 in those SEC home games against LSU and Vanderbilt, because it was two beatable teams coming to town on the home floor. That's what Mizzou needed to do. And Mizzou did do that, beat Vanderbilt 75-66. It was a game that, in some ways, in terms of like the Mizzou end of things, was similar to this Florida game, in that it was a really hot start, really strong first half, and then second half just kind of slowed down a little bit offensively. There were sluggish moments, and then they did enough in the last few minutes to hold on. In this case, it was Mizzou being the only team to score really in the last couple minutes of the game, and getting the final word with the last several points of the game there. That actually, I think, meant a lot to the process of this team coming together. Dennis Gates said afterwards, he admitted that it was a game that Missouri needed to win. And he's the type of coach, as really all of these coaches are, where, after any game, win or loss, they want to give credit to the opponent and praise the opponent and all that. And Dennis Gates did to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is they're a fun team to watch. They've got a unique style of play. They've got a first-year coach who I think is building something intriguing there. I'm not going to sit here and say they are or aren't an NCAA tournament team. I haven't watched enough of them or enough of the field. But I think they've got the potential. to be a team that that stresses some other teams in SEC play this year. So Dennis Gates, you know, said all of that, but then said the truth, which is that Missouri needed to be 2-0 that week with LSU and Vanderbilt coming to town. They're the type of teams who, when you get them on your home floor, if you want to be an SEC team that is going somewhere, you have to get wins. Missouri got wins. That matters a lot. So anyway, that's the background for this trip to Florida that comes around on Tuesday. Mizzou, like I said, goes in there down double digits and then comes out with a really electric first half there. They're within the first really 8 minutes of the game, they go up by 10 points. And Caleb Grill just takes over. He had one, I think it ended up technically being a 47 second maybe stretch. He hits three three-pointers in 45, 47 seconds. And one of them was just deep and over a contest and a ridiculous shot. So come out with a great first half. They slow down a little bit before halftime, but then end up actually scoring the last several points of the first half and lead by 16 at the break. Florida starts chipping it away at this in the second half. The Mizzou offense slows down a little bit, which I don't think that's any sort of glaring red flag when you're on the road. And they'd shot 50% from three in the first half. That's not really sustainable. This team is a decent 3-point shooting team. They're not making half their threes sort of team. So that all scales back a little in the second half. Mizzou's not really making its free throws, which is a little more concerning for this team. And I'll put it this way: Florida certainly benefited from the officials more than Missouri did in this. Right? I'm not someone who I don't like to do ref talk in the podcast or in my writing or things like that. You know, it can be, people can get so caught up in the moment with all that stuff. It's generally better to stay out of that. There were some officiating calls there that it sure would have been nice to get the explanation, right? The, you know, the Florida player grabbing the rim and that not being called a goaltend, right? I don't know. You know, Tony Perkins, Mizzou point guard, gets ejected for a flagrant two foul when he has possession of the ball, trying to, you know, dribble up the floor, or he's stationary at this point, I guess, holding the ball. Florida defenders not draped on him, but, you know, right in front of his face, and to create space, Perkins kind of does not a rip through move, but, you know, kind of swings the ball, and his elbow goes right into the one spot where absolutely nobody wants to get elbowed, and the Florida player goes down and you know, sells it. I'm not disputing that it didn't hurt. Like, I'm sure it hurt. He goes down, goes to review. There were so many reviews in this game, so many reviews. And Perkins gets tossed. That changed things for Missouri at that point, because Ant Robinson, who's the other primary point guard, was in foul trouble. So in comes freshman T.O. Barrett, who comes in and plays admirably at that point in the contest. But officiating was definitely a factor here, if nothing else, just because of the number of fouls that were called. This game ended up taking a very long time. I think it ended up being a 2.5 hour game because of the number of fouls called. But in the final minute, Mizzou sends Ant Robinson, no, excuse me, not Ant Robinson, to the free throw line, sends Mark Mitchell to the free throw line. And he's someone who, free throws have been something I've been keeping an eye on with Mark Mitchell. He's very good at getting to the line, hasn't been making free throws at a particularly high rate. And I feel okay saying that, like, this isn't me taking a shot, because his free throw percentage this year has not been what it was in the years when he was at Duke. It has scaled back this year. But when Mizzou really, really needs free throws up 2 points, he hits a pair of them. Florida goes down and gets a wide open layup through a sort of weird possession. Caleb Grill gets intentionally fouled. He makes his pair of free throws. That puts Mizzou up by 4 points with 5 seconds left. Florida hits a kind of crazy three to make it a 1-point game, but there's 1 second on the clock, no timeouts. It was over once Caleb Grill iced the game with those free throws. So again, we talked about the kind of historical context for this one. It's the first top five road win since 2012. But what I think is worth weighing with this game, I think this is a bigger game for Mizzou men's basketball than beating Kansas was in December. Top eight Kansas, I should say. Now, I don't want to diminish what that game was, right? For the lifetime Mizzou fans, that means a lot, right? For the any Mizzou fan, like for the people who were in that building and stormed the court that day, that means a ton and will be a lasting memory, right? That game, you know, what Tamar Bates did scoring 29 points in that game, that will go down in the Mizzou history books. But this game, going into a tough road environment, playing a top five team that by the looks of Florida, it really seems like they could be a top three seed in the NCAA tournament, maybe even a one or two seed when it's all said and done, right? Going in and beating that team on the road, that's just not something you see Missouri teams doing. It just isn't. That's not shade against the program. That's the reality of it. There are not many teams that will go in there and play like that. Tennessee, who was ranked number one at the time, went in there and just collapsed offensively and couldn't hit a shot against Florida. It's difficult to beat this Gators team. But Mizzou goes and does it. And so it's a season altering win in my eyes. Like the Kansas win is historic in its own right. It's a big thing for the program. This game means more to the current season. Yes, it will look great on the NCAA tournament resume, but it alters the season in a way that all of a sudden this year becomes about more than making the NCAA tournament. Whereas before, even just last week, even just Tuesday at 7 p.m. before the 8 p.m. tip-off, right? The goal for this season was, you know what, yeah, Missouri has a path to the NCAA tournament. They need to get these eight wins, which means they need to win these home games. And it was like, talked about it on this podcast. That was the, okay, yeah, this could be an NCAA tournament run. Now that could change to should. This should be an NCAA tournament run. Mizzou is 3-1 in SEC play, which that's for the first time, I should add. Not being 3-1 in conference, they've done that before, but 3-1 to start SEC play since they joined the SEC, never happened. So got three wins. Eight, again, we think eight is probably the threshold that you need to be making the tournament. If you get to, you know, obviously nine or more, then you're certainly going to be in as an SEC club, but eight wins is what you need to get to. So Mizzou needs to find, at minimum, five wins between now and the end of the regular season. There are 14 games to go. So missing out on this would mean not getting those five wins. So getting four or fewer wins, which would mean going 4-10 between now and when SEC play ends in March. And if Mizzou goes 4-10 at this point, that's a disappointment. It would be. So the NCAA tournament, I think, becomes an expectation now. And the path is a lot clearer. They've got three of those wins. If they take care of business at home, and now, given this talent, you know, you start to look at, okay, next Tuesday, they're at Texas, right? And Texas has not had a great season, has struggled to acclimate to the SEC a little bit, right? Is that more of an opportunity than we thought it was? You start to look at all of that stuff a little bit differently. And it raises... Well, it makes clear, for one, that the ceiling for this team is higher than we thought it was, right? This is not a team, I don't think, where the ceiling is just making the NCAA tournament and then you're happy to be there, happy to be in the bracket, and whatever happens, happens, right? It seems like it might be higher than that. The question that we'll now be looking to see answered over the next few games, and there's a stretch in particular I'm going to talk about in a minute that I want to look at. But the question is how high that ceiling is, right? Is this a Sweet 16 ceiling, right? It's hard at this point to say anything bigger than that, just because so many things can happen in March and happen in that setting. But it does feel like just being able to beat a top five team away from home, and keep in mind they've been competitive against Memphis to start the season. I don't think anybody's really thinking about that game anymore. They pushed Illinois in I don't like to call the Bragging Rights environment a neutral site. Like, it is neutral, but it's more that it's a 50-50 crowd. But, you know, pushed Illinois in that setting. And Illinois is a very good team when they've got Yako Sionis healthy. The ceiling seems higher for this Missouri team. So it's now going to be a matter of establishing, is this a team that... is going to be a, you know, round of 32 type, Sweet 16 type, you know, what level of postseason postseason winning needs to happen for this season to be a success. And at this point now, the talk of struggles of last year, all of that is out the window now. I think a lot of people are going to be bought in to this team. I'll be excited to see what the crowd looks like on Saturday. Arkansas comes to town. They the Razorbacks are 0-4 to start SEC play under John Calipari in his first year. Unexpected struggles, and not that I can say I was following his build of that program or build of this year's roster, I should say, all that closely, but in a vacuum, it is sort of strange to see them at 0-4 with him as the coach. They lost to LSU this week, and as we've established, LSU is, you know, going to be in the bottom third of the SEC. That game was in Baton Rouge, but one, you know, you can start to look at all this. Arkansas not in a good spot. They're going to be reaching a point, if they aren't there already, of desperation if they want to be an NCAA tournament team. Just starting 0-4 means, again, if you're going to look at what you got to get to 8 wins, that is going to require them to go, 8-6 down the stretch, which would be quite the reversal. So it seems like they're pretty much out of the NCAA tournament discussion. I got a question during today's reader chat over at stmtoday.com that you can be a part of as a subscriber to the Post-Dispatch about whether it's a potential trap game or letdown game for Missouri. And in a sense, it is, right? You know, you're coming off a very emotional, positive win, all that. You do wonder or worry about what the letdown's going to be. But the last I heard, there were less than 750 tickets available for this game. So it's trending towards a sellout. It'll be a Saturday at 5 p.m., which is, I think, a pretty good time for people to get there. Classes, the spring semester starts at Mizzou next week, so I would assume a fair number of students will either be like moving back to Columbia or be back in Columbia by that point. So the environment should be what it needs to be for this game, and it's Arkansas, so fans will be fired up for it. And I think Dennis Gates has equipped this team with an urgency and an intensity that I'm strangely not concerned about that, which maybe then will make some of you think, well, then this really is a potential trap game. But that I think I feel confident in Missouri's ability to get a result there. And it will be interesting to see what they can do against Texas next week on the road there. But then looking ahead a little bit is the stretch that is going to decide what the ceiling is for this Missouri team. Again, it's established at this point they can take care of business at home, and they can maybe spring one or two games on the road, and that will be enough for the NCAA tournament at this point. But if the season is going to be something more, there's a 4-game stretch coming up on the other side of that Texas game that will show this off. So that stretch is at home against an Ole Miss team that currently is ranked number 21. But since that ranking, they went and beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa and caused a really bad night for the Crimson Tide. I think they turned the ball over a whole lot. It was some sort of record. I don't know if it was a record under Nate Oates or what the timeline was there. But the Rebels forced a whole lot of turnovers from Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So Ole Miss is a team that, you know, they did what Missouri did on the road this week. They went and beat a top 5 team on the road. So they're going to be a formidable group. They're coming to Mizzou Arena. Then Mizzou is at Mississippi State playing on the hump. They're the Bulldogs are a good team. Josh Hubbard, the guard there, is a lot of fun to watch when you don't have a horse in the race. But he'll be a challenge for Mizzou. And then on the road, back-to-back road games, then at number 6, currently Tennessee. You would assume the Vols will move up. They've had one really bad game at Florida, but otherwise looked electric. And then Mizzou's at home against number 11, Texas A&M. They lost to Kentucky. So again, these rankings might change, but this will be 4 top 25 teams, potentially 4 teams, you know, really within the top, I don't know, 15, depending what Ole Miss movement looks like. And Mizzou should be ranked at that point too, but it's that 4-game stretch, 2 home games, 2 road games that will dictate what the ceiling is. If Mizzou goes 2-2 there, wins the home games, and, you know, whatever that looks like, we'll preview that a little bit more, I think, this time next week when we're looking at that. But I've got my eyes on that stretch, because I think that is when we'll start to get an answer to the question of what is this team's ceiling, one way or another.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
I do want to change gears. Talk about Mizzou football. Two developments on the football front that have happened this week. One came, I think, within the hour before the Florida game, and made that night, I think, even more fun for Mizzou fans. Georgia defensive end Damon Wilson, the second, committing to Missouri out of the transfer portal. At the time, he was ranked as the best player available in the transfer portal by 24/7 Sports. And regardless of availability, entering the portal, all of that stuff, he was considered one of the best edge rushers in the class. This was obviously a pretty big win for Eli Drinkwitz and company. The recruitment, I wouldn't call it a recruitment saga, but it did have its moments where there were rumors he was on a visit to Missouri and he had a visit to Ohio State planned. And then he posted on his Instagram story like a snow when it was snowing in Missouri, and then later it snowed in Georgia, and so there was all of that. Ohio State again was also in the mix, but he signs with Mizzou. This to me is Eli Drinkwitz flexing, frankly, in the portal. Defensive end at this point in the cycle was not a position of need for Missouri. They'd already went and got Nate Johnson an edge rusher from App State, and there's a good number of defensive ends returning next year, plus Darius Smith, who himself was a transfer from Georgia, coming off the knee injury that it's interesting. It happened during fall camp and took away this season for him. He'll be healthy. There was a lot of talent already. Zion Young coming back, a lot of talent already on the books at defensive end for next year. And then Eli Drinkwitz goes out and gets one of the best defensive ends to transfer this cycle and the best available player out there. It's a statement that he's going to add talent however and whenever he can get it. That will be an extremely competitive group next year in terms of talent, extremely deep. You'd expect there to be a lot more production than there has been, than there was this season. And it means the portal class on the whole is now very highly ranked by all the services. The team sent out a marketing email promoting that to, I think, get people on the season ticket waiting list or sell season tickets. And I'll write more about that and dive into it. And once we're a little bit closer to spring practice or once the transfer portal activity really, really wraps up, we're not going to know anything until probably the end of next September as far as who's really on this team in terms of quality and who's going to be in what spots. But we went into this offseason saying this is the most important offseason for Eli Drinkwitz because he has to reload. Almost all of the players from that 2023 Cotton Bowl run have now left the program. The exceptions being Connor Tolleson, Dalen Carnell, and Brett Norfleet. Those are the only players who started the Cotton Bowl and who are projected to start next season. He needed to reload. So far, I think it's gone well. He's done what he's needed to do. The positions of need have been filled. The metaphor I'm thinking of is that, you know, he's completed the assignment. He's turned it in. The grades won't come out for another really 9 months, but the work has been turned in, and there will be a spring portal window, and it's all that. It's not done. There's an opportunity for revisions, to continue the metaphor, but really, really solid. Solid acquisition efforts in the portal from Eli Drinkwitz and company. That and company saw a change today, or will see a change this week, I should say. There was only one opening on the coaching staff this offseason when DJ Smith, who was the linebackers coach and co-defensive coordinator, he also had a role on the recruiting side as well. He left the night before the Music City Bowl to go become the defensive coordinator at Appalachian State, which is his alma mater. His replacement, or the deal to hire his replacement, is coming together. ESPN reported this first, but a source told me this morning Missouri is finalizing a deal with Miami linebackers coach and co-defensive coordinator Devin Nicholson to take the same position at Mizzou. That could very well be official by the time you are listening to this. But at the moment I'm recording this, I got to use that language. They were finalizing with it. There's nothing finalizing it. There was nothing official with it at that point. But the expectation is certainly that gets across the line. Nicholson, like I said, was at Miami. He'd been there for 2 years. This last year, he got that co-defensive coordinator tag. He also seems to be established in the recruiting side of things, has that as part of his skill set. So from a kind of skill set portfolio sort of a standpoint, seems like he brings a similar package to what DJ Smith was for Missouri. Nicholson had been at Louisville for a while, been at Southern Miss, some other schools. He was a good linebacker himself at Florida State. He'd signed with the Falcons after his playing career, but pretty gnarly, it sounds like, injury that took away his NFL career, and so he got into coaching. He did, this is interesting, start out coaching at the high school level, which is something that that was true for Eli Drinkwitz and some other members of his staff, and something that the coaches who start out at the high school level, there's definitely a sense of pride in that, and they can have their own kind of unique camaraderie, having risen up the ranks from that level. So perhaps something that stood out with Nicholson as he went through that process. He'll be working with a group of linebackers that's fairly different from what you saw this year. Khalil Jacobs, who missed the back half of the season with an injury, should be back. The transfers of Makai Gabayor from Nebraska, Josiah Trotter, freshman All-American by some of the groups that award that, coming from West Virginia. And then returning from kind of the young guy ranks this year, Nick Rodriguez and Jeremiah Beasley. And then there still remains the possibility that Tristan Newsom could come back. I have not seen any indication of whether he's decided he wants to use the extra year now given to junior college player, former junior college players. He hasn't made an announcement one way or another. I'll check in on it. But he'd be welcome back if he wants to come back, but it is his choice on whether he wants to do that. So very different linebackers group from a personnel standpoint and a coaching standpoint for Missouri. Spring ball, I've started to see some schools announcing spring game dates, so wouldn't shock me if that comes out rather soon here. But it is worth noting, last year's spring game was Bud Tempo. This isn't like how spring games used to be back in the day. It is changing up. Before we go on the show today, do you want to talk about the harder hitting stuff, or at least the things that when I wrote the first story this week, it went on the news front of our newspaper, not the sports page, and that's Mizzou Athletics Finances. This is the time of year, well, actually Wednesday to be exact, was the day of the year when athletic departments around the country submit their financial reports to the NCAA. It's the NCAA's financial reporting system, I believe it's called. Yes, NCAA's membership financial reporting system. It's pretty standardized reports that break down revenue and expenses by different sports into different categories. All of this, these reports, if you're someone who, I'll preface this by saying, if you want to read this report, the PDF is in our stories on stltoday.com. And I do encourage folks on something like this to actually sit down and read the story. This is something where I talked to Moon Choi, the UM system president, and Laird Veach, the athletic director, even though Laird Veach was not around for much of the year in question. We'll talk about that in a second. But they gave kind of their context, their explanations, their goals, all of that stuff, to be transparent and proactive about talking about this, because Mizzou returned to the red with an operating deficit of $15.2 million in fiscal year 2024. And so that's a figure that comes with context, and they talk about that. So we've got a couple stories up on that at stltoday.com that I do really encourage folks to read. I'll walk through kind of my takeaways here, but again, you can get the news and the information there. And this is something that I imagine there'll maybe be another story on next week, because there's a lot of information in these reports. So Mizzou set records in fiscal year 2024 with $168 million in revenue and $183.2 million in expenses. That is where the $15.2 million operating deficit comes in. So the fiscal year 2024 ran from July of 2023 to June of 2024. So this is data that includes the 2023 football season, which was 11 wins, the Cotton Bowl, all of that business, five sellouts in there as well. It was the really quite rough men's basketball season, 0-19 in the SEC. It includes about, 8 months of Desiree Reed-Francois' final year. She resigned not too far from this time last year. So mostly her leadership, then a little bit of the interim and a little bit of Laird Veach in that fiscal year. But so the year does include that change in administration. And so that's what goes into it. This $15.2 million deficit was covered by the University of Missouri. So, you know, athletics is partially, I know that partially its own thing, but the university covered that $15.2 million deficit as an internal loan. They're referring to it as an investment in athletics. It is something that already happened. Like it's not a, you know, next year investing this happened to cover that deficit. There was also what in budget speak is called direct institutional support, which is quantified financially and can include loans. That was marked down at $25.8 million. So in total, about $41 million went from the university side to the athletic side in fiscal year 2024. That is not necessarily a new development. There had been direct institutional support before from the university to the athletic side that happens at other schools. Troy, you know, said Mizzou's not an outlier in this. And as far as I can tell, they aren't an outlier in doing that. And the university seems fine with this being the dynamic that Moon Choi and the board of curators have pretty resoundingly and now in the last year especially, you know, repeatedly been saying, yes, we are investing in athletics. They see returns in increased freshman enrollment and increased applications from prospective students. Some people just aren't going to like that. There are some people who you know don't like the amount of money that's going around college sports, and that money, that amount continues to rise. There are some people who don't like these this level of sport being tied to an institution that is supposed to be academic, right? This is how it is. I'm not going to say anything is good or bad. It's what it is. The money, the cost to be competitive or participate in college sports is only going to continue going up with revenue sharing coming in there. You know, NIL is here. Agents are here. Revenue sharing will be here. Coaches are the highest paid state employees in a lot of situations. Eli Drinkwitz is the highest paid state employee in Missouri and for the University of Missouri system, right? That's not changing. And so I think with a school like Mizzou, you are seeing leaders recognize that. And that's where this investment comes in. Again, that's they see returns on this and are working this out. I asked Moon Choi very, very bluntly, like, given some of the turnover that this particular year saw, if there was anything surprising in here, and he said no. They also said, you know, they expect this next fiscal year, the one that is currently about halfway done, to play out fairly similarly. This is what it's going to be. They want to increase the revenue side of things. Laird Veach has talked about that with raising season ticket prices for football to try to, you know, they've established they can fill Faurot Field. They need to find a way to then get more money on top of that. They've talked about cutting expenses, but on the whole, the revenue you would expect to keep going up, the expenses you would expect to keep going up. It's about the margins there, and trying to make this sustainable. There will be more changes in college sports from a rule standpoint. You know, all these things. So little is expected to be concrete for the next few years that there's a lot in flux with college sports. A couple things that again I've written more about, but that did stand out to me. The kind of operating margin for football shrank despite a pretty good year. They obviously brought in more money. The ticket sales went up, which you would expect with five sellouts there. But the expenses went up too. And the margin aspect for football, I think, is important because many athletic departments in Mizzou included do rely on that to cover gaps, right? To, you know, the football revenue. I'd written in a story that came out this week that you know, when you look at how important football is from a financial standpoint, about one third of the money that comes into Mizzou athletics comes via football, and about a quarter of the money spent goes to football. So one out of every $3 coming in, football. One out of every $4 going out, football. That's approximate, but generally there, that's how important this is. So it's worth considering that. Now, men's basketball, once again, from a margin standpoint, was technically not a revenue-making sport. They were in the red. Not by all that much, right? About $750,000. But when you look at the expenses side of that, what I think is the factor there is that Mizzou is still paying off Quanzo Martin's buyout, and that was a payment of about $2.5 million here. So in the red by $750,000, but paying $2.5 million in severance, right? You can see where that impacts this, and that was a point Laird Veach made to me of like, you know, you can look at a given sports margin in a given year, but there can be those kind of one-time expenses. There could be something like, oh, uniforms or equipment, all that, that pops up. He looks at it more trend-wise, and he's very happy with how the financial picture looks for men's basketball and the fiscal health of that program. Ticket sales did fine during the losing streak, which I think passed. You know, the attendance did not seem to be an issue during that. Fans were still showing up for those games. But I do think the fact that you're seeing, you know, this is, that was Dennis Gates' second season on the job, and the program is still seeing a financial impact from firing Quanzo Martin. In sports in general, and this is not just a college thing or a Missouri thing or anything like that, it's so easy to clamor for firing a coach, right? And you see even at the college level some of these ridiculous buyouts paid, right? Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher is the one that will stand out. But you'll see talk of paying these buyouts. They do have a financial impact for a couple years down the road. And so, you know, you can frame this as the men's basketball program is operating a deficit because of firing Quanzo Martin, right? That's not a, you know, oh, they shouldn't have done it or anything like that. That's just, there's a financial impact to making a decision like that. And you see that in kind of the flip side with Mizzou women's basketball. They made the decision. And when I say they, it's the, because this fell in sort of the weird interim gap between Desiree Reed-Francois' departure, the interim administration, and then hiring Laird Veach. Robin Pynchon was retained as the women's basketball coach, and she's going into her last year. But last season, even as women's college basketball was booming, right, with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, just the whole year that was for the women's college game, that boom was not happening in Columbia, Missouri. Ticket sales dropped by 9% as that was going. And then, of course, this year, Pynchon is still back. Mizzou women have not won an SEC game, may not win an SEC game this year. You know, I never am going to say never, you know, it's statistically always unlikely that a team is going to go winless in conference play. But looking at what that team has done and looking at the schedule, I don't see an obvious opportunity for it, right? It has been a down stretch for that. You would imagine ticket sales will drop again this year. I have not covered a women's basketball game this year because the athletic department made its indication that it was taking a year off in that sport by not investing in it at the time. There are now, the NCAA approved this week that tournament units, which is just money from the NCAA tournament, will be available for women's basketball now. There's money on the table in the sport. There are fans and eyeballs and TV ratings on the table. Mizzou is not participating in that at this point. Pynchon doesn't have a new contract. It expires at the end of the season. Assuming that holds, that situation holds, she'll leave. They won't have to pay a buyout. She has one recruit coming in, but you can't really blame her because what incentive is there for a lame duck coach to go and recruit? I have nothing against her. She's fantastic to work with. That's what the situation is. Wrestling and softball both brought in more revenue than women's basketball did last year. That's the landscape. for Mizzou women's basketball. And I know some people just don't care about that as a sport. I disagree with you there, but the takeaway is that Mizzou has not invested in that at this point. Again, you can find more financial takeaways and the full report if you want to look through it yourself at stltoday.com. We got tables showing the changes year over year in different expense categories. Again, I do really think it's worth your time to understand that. But that's the show for today. We'll have more basketball coverage this weekend. As I mentioned, Arkansas comes to town. More number stuff coming out here. Football activity, the spring practices. We are not as far away as you'd think we are from all of that. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. Like I said, you can find more of my work, my writing, my reporting at stltoday.com. We'll be back at you next week with another episode. But for now, thanks for taking the time to listen.